Well, thank you for coming and joining in the session with us. We're just about on the time, aren't we? Yeah, we're away. If you can't understand my accent, tough. I can't do anything about it. And so if you know there's Australian somewhere here, they may understand. You can sit next to them and they can translate. But, you know, I'm from the better place, New Zealand, so... Yeah. See, look at this. This guy appreciates. So we'll just wait for a couple of people to sit down and we'll get underway. So our session is on transforming the Kolkata sex industry. And my name's Kerry Hilton. And we're going to sort of go through this together. But before we do that, let's bow our heads and pray and ask God to be with us as we move through this time. Father, when your son Jesus came, he grabbed the words of the prophet Isaiah. He made them his own, said, "Blessed are you poor, for yours is the kingdom of God." He said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, and he's chosen me to bring good news for the poor and release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, freedom for the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And as we sit here this afternoon, our prayer would be that your words that you have taken on board, freedom for the poor, release to the captives, might be our words too. That we might have your agenda, that you might place the love for the poor that you have in our hearts too, that we might follow you with everything that we have. In the name of Jesus we pray. Amen. So if you just come in, welcome. Look, just to provide a bit of a setting, I better get it off this thing here. To provide a bit of a setting, we're going to introduce you to some of the women in Kolkata, and that will provide a little bit of context as we move forward today.
কষ্ট ছিল যখন লাইনে ছিলাম দিন পর দিন খেতে পাইনি না খেয়ে খেয়ে থেকেছি এখন বাবার আসলে সুখ দিয়েছে সুখ হয়েছে প্রথমতে আমার মা অনেক কষ্ট করেছে আমাদের জন্য বৌদি সব সময় ঘরে কাস্টমার অনেক কাস্টমার হয়তো আমাকে চাইস
The reality of starting a business here is not about having a great idea. It's about getting to know your community and understanding who's here. And this community is about women trapped in the sex trade. And if that's the job, the trade they're in now, then what can they do that will actually give an alternative to selling their bodies?
আমাদের প্রোডাকশন ভালো হলে মাল বাইরে যাবে তবে আমাদের ফি সেট আরো বড় হবে তাহলে আমরা মেয়েদের মুক্তি দেব আরো
Free Set hires women based on their desire for freedom from the sex trade, regardless of the skills they have. They're given training for their job, as well as being made aware of basic health issues. They're also taught simple reading, writing, and counting skills.
ছোটবেলায় আমার মা একটু গরিব ছিল লেখাপড়া করাতে পারিনি প্রচন্ড গরিব ওই জন্য পড়তে পারিনি আগে আমি পারতাম না আমি এখানে এখানে এসে এই কদিনই শিখেছি আপনার কাছে আগে একদিনই পারতাম না এখন লক্ষ্মী দি যদি বলে তাও পারবো দিদিমা যদি বলে তাও আমি এখন পারবো আমি না দেখে পারবো ভালো লাগছে আমার খুব আমি আনন্দ পাচ্ছি লিখে
Choosing to work at Freeset is just the first step on a woman's journey to freedom. Now she is free from working in the sex trade, she must learn how to be free from the baggage of her past. Debt, disease, addictions, and a lack of self-confidence are common problems. They take time to work through. Freeset provides a supportive community where this can happen.
আমার জন্য প্রথম হচ্ছে নতুন মেয়ে যে কাজ জানে না তাকে কাজ শেখানো যে ভালো সেলাই জানে কিছু মেয়ে সেলাই জানে ভালো কিছু মেয়ে জানে না যে ভালো সেলাই জানে তাই যে জানে না তা ভালো মেয়ে তাকে শেখাবে
আমার খুব ভয় লাগছিল ব্যাগ করতে ব্যাগ সেরকম পারতাম না ক্যারিরা 10 দিনের টাইম দিয়েছিল ব্যাগের জন্য ব্যাগ হতো না কিরণ দিয়েছিল ও আমাকে ব্যাগ শিখিয়েছিল সুন্দর কাজ করছি খাচ্ছি আমার এই মায়নাতে আমার ছেলেকেও মানুষ করছি আমার ছেলেকেও খাওয়াচ্ছি
A job at Freeset doesn't mean a woman suddenly finds great prosperity. It means she can earn a livable income from a job with dignity. If she has small children, they can be cared for at Freeset's in-house nursery. For many, working at Freeset means they can afford small but significant improvements, like electricity for a light and fan. Freeset works actively to empower women with life skills that they can use both at work and in the wider community. As they gain skills and confidence, they're given added responsibilities. For some, this means a more complicated sewing task. For others, it involves a position of leadership, or perhaps learning to use a computer. The women are broadly involved in the life of the business and participate actively in decision making, such as the hiring of staff.
Being involved in the business that counts, that actually changes lives, as opposed to just making money, there's nothing else like it. It's the most amazing thing in the world.
আমি লাইন ছেড়ে দিয়েছি আমি মুক্তি পেয়েছি আমি সবকে বলতে পারবো যে আমি ওখানকার না আমি খুব আমার জীবন খুব ভালো আমার সুস্থ জীবন আমি ভালোভাবে মুক্তি পেয়েছি আমি সমাজের সঙ্গে মিশতে পেরেছি মানে মুখ উঁচু করে বাড়ি যাই সবার সঙ্গে মিশি কথা বলি
আমি চাইছি ফিসের পরিবার আরো বড় হোক আরো মেয়েরা আসুক আরো মেয়েরা মুক্তি পাক যারা এখনো লাইনে দাঁড়িয়ে আছে এই জায়গায় আসুক আরো কাজ শিখুক আমরা আরো কোম্পানি বাড়াতে চাই
আমার খুব ভালো লাগে ফ্রিসেটে কাজ
The great thing about the Freeset story is that you can be a part of it. When you buy a Freeset bag or a Freeset tee, your money is directly contributing to women's freedom. It's not charity, it has dignity, and it puts food in their stomachs. You join them on their journey to freedom. See, now I'm just plain homesick, to be honest. Look, to understand what it means to transform a community, then it's important that we know that community and the context of that community. So a little bit of history, really. Sonagachi, this is the oldest and largest red light district in Calcutta. As the video said, something like 10,000 women within a mile trapped in prostitution, mainly through poverty. Thousands and thousands of men coming every day as customers. It's a filthy place, really. It's utter squalor at times. There are rows and rows of women that stand shoulder to shoulder in lines waiting for customers, and often you can see rats running underneath their feet as they wait for those customers. They have their customers in very, very small rooms, often shared by many, many girls. It's not a flash place at all. But it didn't used to be like that.
in the 17 and 1800s, rich Bengali men, Bengali babus, they call them, used to keep their mistresses there. They used to have a holiday home there. So they'd have their wife and their children in one place, and then they'd have their holiday home complete with their holiday wife in another place. And it would give them a lot of kudos in society, actually, because there was a lot of respect if you could keep not only your wife well, but also your mistress. And so these women would be spoiled with gifts. They would lavish gifts on them and even give them property. And so while they were with their rich babus, their Bengali men, they did okay in terms of provision. But you know what happens after a while, don't you? These women got old, and these Bengali men desired them less. And I guess some of them would have gone and got, and excuse my language, new models that they could have on the side from their families. And so they started desired. And then they went to discarded these women in Sonagachi. And once they're discarded, then they had to have a means of being able to make a living to feed themselves and even their children. And so they would have customers come in. But because they were getting older, then that became more difficult to make ends meet. And so they began to take on girls, you see, because some of them had property. They had these resources that they had at their disposal, so they turned it into a business opportunity, whereby they brought in young girls, and those young girls would service the customers, and they would take some of the profit, or even maybe owned those girls. And slowly, this way, Sonagachi grew and has grown to what it is today. Now, I missed a slide before. Sonagachi is, it's called Golden Tree, really. Sona means gold, and gach means tree. I have been everywhere in Sonagachi. There is no golden tree. There's not even a money tree. I can't even think of a nice tree. But that's the name of the place. Women today, they come from, in Sonagachi, they come from all over India. And from Bangladesh. The border between India and Bangladesh is very porous. And so women are trafficked across there every day. In their hundreds and at times, I guess, in their thousands, coming backwards and forwards. And there's a lot of girls there from Nepal as well. In fact, there is one building in Sonagachi that is reputed to have, and it's a large building, 400 girls operating from the one building. And most of those girls are from Nepal. And so you've got a strong presence of Nepalese girls there, trafficked. But there's one place where lots and lots of girls come from. It's a place, a district in West Bengal, and that is the West Bengal map. And you can see the outlining areas put there for you. It's a place called Murshidabad. If you Google Murshidabad, you will discover some reports that have been done, and it is now considered the poorest district in India. The rural population is said to have around 56 to 60% of their people are below the international poverty line. Now, that's hard to understand exactly what that means, but it means they're very poor. It's mainly a Muslim population, has a Muslim history, but huge poverty in that area. Would you believe? And I haven't got the stats for Sonagachi, but I can give you stats for Freesand, that 25% of all the girls that are at Freesand come from this one area. You've got the whole of India, the rest of West Bengal, you've got Bangladesh and Nepal, and 25% of the women come from this one area. of around 6 million people in that rural area. There are villages in Murshidabad where their economy seems to rest on the sale of the girls to the sex trade. You see, poverty is the seedbed, the foundation that is given so that girls can be exploited and sold into prostitution. Poverty is the thing that provides opportunity here. See, poverty is about not having a voice. If you're poor and you're in a village, and someone comes and steals your little girl, your 10-year-old girl, and you go to the police, often they're not even listening. They'll file a report, nothing will happen. You have no voice, nobody's listening. And because nobody listens, then there's the opportunity for the traffickers and the people to continue to steal these girls. Poverty is all about lack of choice. Now, you know, that's hard for us to understand, you see, because all of us here have grown up with choices. Generally, we've got a choice about what we eat for breakfast. I know we don't eat a banner. I had the oats as well. But we have a choice what we're going to eat for breakfast. And we choose what we're going to wear for the day. A free set tea, of course. And we choose what kind of car we're going to drive. And we choose the career path that we're going to have. Whereas in poverty, there are a few choices. And sometimes when there's few choices, it means that a mother will sit and look at her family and her children, and they're starving in the village, and she'll choose one of her daughters to sell. Maybe for $50 or $100, so that the rest of the family can eat. And she would consider that she didn't have a choice. You know, poverty means that little girls are married off at a very, very young age. Just a little while ago, a woman who is in the sex trade walked into to Freeset, and she bought her daughter who was in the trade. And her daughter was 17, and she had a 4-year-old son. And we were sitting down talking with her, and I said, you can't be 17. Your son's 4. And she says to me, why not? I was married at 10. And I looked at the mother, and she said, yeah, I married her at 10. We're really, really poor. I needed to get her married off. And, of course, the husband had taken off, and she'd got into the trade. Sometimes these 10-year-old girls are sold off in fake marriages, and men have their way with them, and then they sell them into the trade. Sometimes they end up in marriages, and for one reason or another, they're not able to bear children, their duty in life. And so they are kicked out on the street by their husbands and their husbands' family. And there's so much shame that they can't go home. Their parents won't take them back, and so they are tricked or taken, and they end up in the sex trade. They are the discarded ones. In Kolkata, the streets are lined everywhere with mothers, with children who sleep on the side of the road. And it's hard for those mums because they go to bed at night listening to the cries of their children because they haven't got enough food in their stomachs. Their husbands or their men are missing. They've gone off somewhere to try and find work, supposedly. Or they've died, or they drink whatever money comes into the household. And so to feed her children, and she's only got a few things, she will begin to sell the things that she doesn't need the most. And she'll sell those things and get a little bit of food. And when those things are gone, she'll sell her cooking utensils. And then when they're gone, she'll sell the one thing she has left. Her body. So she can feed her children. Of course, prostitution doesn't get them out of poverty either. Because with prostitution, there's illness, disease. You know the story, HIV, hepatitis, tuberculosis. They go a lot with the trade. And we have to say goodbye to a lot of our friends. They'd start their freedom journey and then they are robbed of the rest of their life because of these things. And then there are the parasites, as I call them. When a girl gets into the trade, and while she's younger and a little bit more beautiful, she can earn reasonable money. And so a man will attach himself to her. And he will sit around and do nothing. But because she wants companionship, she wants somebody around, she'll go with that. And he will seek to keep her in the trade, even though she might want to be free. And when it comes to actually giving the choice of freedom to girls who have men in their lives, it is hard and it is difficult because that's not the men's choice. Because they have to go and work. And then there's madams who own the girls. Sometimes it's the whole family back in the village that are being supported by this one girl in the trade, and so they send as much money every month that they can and they keep enough just to feed themselves and pay the rent. And of course we talked before about when you get old, when you're less desirable. When you started having an income of 100 rupees a customer, $2, just over. And then it went down to 50 rupees, just over a dollar. And then you get a bit older and you go for 40 and 30 and 20 and 10 rupees so you can have a feed for the day. And we saw on the DVD how one of our women at times didn't even have enough to eat. Poverty pulls women into prostitution. It is a seabed and the opportunity for exploitation, but it keeps them there as well. One of our women, and I'm allowed to mention her name, is Mina. She was 13 years old when Pakistan and Bangladesh were at war with one another, when Bangladesh was trying to be free from Pakistan. East and West Pakistan in those days. And she was in a Bangladesh refugee camp inside India. And there were so many people there that, and the toilets were so filthy that this friend, this person befriended her, this lady, and she was able to use better toilet facilities. And this lady tricked her. And she brought her to Calcutta, a 13-year-old girl. She'd never been to the city before. She'd never seen so many people. She was a village girl. And she was taken and given to this woman in Sonagachi. And later discovered she was sold for 1,000 rupees. What's that, $20? And they didn't force her to do anything at the beginning, and they gave her some clothes and told her to wear them and told her to work in a certain area. All she wanted to do was play. She was 13 years old. And then they shifted her around a bit because she was so young, from brothel to brothel. Then in a few days they put her in a room with two men. And one of these men gave her a glass of Coke. She'd never had a Coke before, didn't know what Coca-Cola was. And then she drank it, and then discovered that it had been drugged, and so she went to get out of that room. But she was 13 years old, and the latch was at the top of the door. And so she banged on that door, and she banged on that door, and nobody came. And she banged on it some more. And then she woke up. And she had just had her first two customers. And and ended a life of prostitution at 13 years old. You see, prostitution is a business. And it's just like a business like anything else when it comes to getting goods to the market. Now, I'm a farmer in my background, actually. And actually, I was a pig farmer. I don't smell today, but I know a little bit about farming. And so if you wanted to grow some wheat, what would you do? You would make sure you till the ground, make sure you've got a good seedbed, and then you would plant your seed, right? Normal stuff. And then you'd look after that, and you would water it well, and you wouldn't spray it because you want it to be organic. And then you would harvest it, right? And then you would put it in your silo. And you would sell it to what we'll call today a wholesaler, somebody who would buy this stuff in bulk. And that wholesaler will take it, and he will change the nature of what he's bought because he wants the value add. And so he'll turn that, grind it, and make it into flour. And once it's into flour in a certain way, then in different areas, he'll repackage that again because it needs to be sold from the wholesaler to the retailer. And so he'll put it down into small packs, ready for the supermarket shelf. And on the shelf, you or I will come along and we'd say we'd like to make some bread. And so we'll take that as a customer and we'll buy it and we'll make some bread. Pretty basic, isn't it? Huh? Pretty basic. Goods to the market. But what if we're not talking about flour? What if we're talking about a little girl? What if in a village in Mushidabad there was a 20-year-old boy and a 17-year-old girl and the parents got together and they arranged their marriage? They'd been in the village and they've grown up together and they were excited about being married. And within them the seed was planted and they had this wonderful, gorgeous little girl. And she was the joy of their life. She was an extension and is an extension of who they are. And like any little village girl, she would go and she would play with all the other kids out in the fields. And when she was 11 years old, one day she didn't come home. Because the wholesaler, the trafficker, came along and took her. And this is the beginning of the repackaging. So they take this little girl and they prepare her for a life of prostitution. Sell her to the madam who repackages her and makes her up and dolls up this little girl. And sells her to a customer who will have his way with her. Probably every time for the first while as a virgin, because a virgin can get a better price. Who would have thought that we'd have to talk about little girls in terms of getting goods to the marketplace? That's the way they treat little girls. So prostitution is a slavery business. It exploits the poor, it exploits those who are in poverty. It preys on those who have no voice, the voiceless ones. And it flourishes because of corruption. If you go to Sonogachi today, There are policemen everywhere. And they're making good money. Prostitution in India is illegal. And you know, sadly, there are many little girls that enter into prostitution that become madams and are involved in the stealing and the taking of new little girls. The exploited keep going and they become the exploiters. So, is it possible for there to be transformation? Is it possible for things to be turned upside down? That's the question here, isn't it? Is it possible for the Word to become flesh and dwell in this area? I love the way the Message puts it, and the Word became flesh and moved into the neighborhood. Historically, people, when it comes to working with women and the sex trade, our first word that we use is rescue. We want to get them out. What happens when you get them out, particularly in Sonogachi, you take them out of those rooms, and there's an empty room. And you get another girl from the village, and you can put her in that room, and you're providing fresh young girls into the marketplace, and you're becoming part of the system. Now there's times when there needs to be rescue, particularly with young girls. And I don't want to knock any agency, including IJM, who do a wonderful job. There is a real, real need for rescue. But the gospel is about transformation. It's about moving into the neighborhood. It's about moving from slavery to freedom, a business of slavery to a business of freedom. Is it possible for there to be a business takeover? Why can't a kingdom business take on the slavery business and win? Why not? Why not? Is it possible for these people who are voiceless to end up having influence? Where people listen to what they have to say because they've got something important to say, to go from unloved to treasured, from brokenness to wholeness, from prostitution to seamstress or screen printer or office worker or accountant or lawyer. Or is it possible? Now we talk about this big God all the time, we sing about him all the time. Can we believe that God can transform a community like this? Do we? I'm asking a question here, people.
Yes.
Not too convincing.
Yes.
Yeah, he can. And he wants to. Because that's what he's on about. You know, just a few weeks ago, and I told this story a couple of days ago, this girl comes into Freeset. And she had this look of despair on her face. And she came at 10:15 in the morning. We start work at 10. And she sat down with the rest of the women and we had our devotions and we opened the scriptures and we sang together and we prayed together. And all the women went off to work and Mina, this is the woman that I shared the story with from Bangladesh, her and I sat down with her. And I said to her, "Why have you come?" And she said, "I want to be free. I want to stop having to sell my body." And then she told us her story. She's 24 years old, been in prostitution for 10 years. Do the sums. Mother and father are dead, has a history in Bangladesh. And I said to her, "Do you know what our business is? Do you know what our business is all about?" And she could hear the sewing machines working in the background because she'd been around. We were talking within the work time space and she'd been part of the woman working at the time, and she could hear those machines, and she said, your business is about sewing bags. And I said, no, it's not. And she looked at me confused. And I said, our business is about freedom. Just for like, for people like you. For you and your neighbours. For women who are trapped in the sex trade. Our business is about freedom. And to get that freedom, we make bags. Good bags and t-shirts. But our business is freedom. And as soon as I said that, her face began to change. And this face of despair began to almost instantaneously, and I've not seen this so rapid, it began to beam into one of hope. And for the next 10 or 15 minutes as we talked things through, her whole face changed, incredibly so. And then we discovered something that we were concerned about. She had a madam. She was under the thumb of a madam. And I said, look, we need to go and talk with your madam because the madam is a parasite. She has an investment in this girl. And so we need to make sure that she can be free from her. And so we went down to the brothel room where she was. And it was a small room, about 3 feet wide maybe, and about 6 feet long. And it was just inside one of the early lanes in Sonogachi. And normally we would sit in that room and we'd talk things over with her and her madam. But we couldn't because there was a customer in there, wasn't there? And so we had to talk out on the lane with the madam. The problem is that you've got everybody else listening. And there are other women who were standing in line waiting for customers listening too. And I was a little bit uncomfortable about that, but we had to proceed. And I said to the madam, and this is what really surprised me, I said, will you let her go? Will you let her be free? And to my amazement, she said, I told her to come. I told her that I'd heard about you guys, you're in our community, and I told her to come if she wanted to be free. Wow. And she said, what's more, I'd like to come and have a look as well. And then all of a sudden, this young girl, I'm not mentioning her name because I haven't got her permission, she began to share with all the others in the line, on the lane, about the freedom she was going to get. With real hope. And she hadn't even started. What's today? She's been with FreeSet for a week and 4 days now. And she is on her journey of freedom and already moving from despair to hope. In the sex trade, you are an outcast. If you are a sex worker, then you are considered bad by the outside community. But there's something about being able to come into this loving, caring community, a business community, where they will love and support you, where they will mother you and sister you into your freedom. God's kingdom is an upside-down kingdom. And he wants to bring healing and wholeness and sickness to health. He wants to bring outcasts into community. It's not an advert, actually. We're not meant to be advertising here, and it's not there for an advert. See, I bet there are lots of you here that have got great skills and expertise to be able to pull stuff like that together, to be able to organise marketing and be able to get together a business plan. I bet there's lots of people here with great skills, great background, better than I've got. I don't have a business background at all. I bet you could do that kind of stuff. But it's not about that, actually. That's important because it gets things going. You know, and I was a bit like this. We've got to be careful that when we move amongst the poor, when we move into the neighbourhood, that we are not like Santa Claus with a big bag, jumping off the plane, giving out little bits of Jesus. And you can laugh, but that's what we tend to do. We have so much to learn from the poor and a whole lot less to teach. And we need to remind ourselves again, the kingdom is more about transformation of communities. Jesus came that our community might be changed from the inside out, not the outside in. And people, the poor, often get it when it comes to following Jesus before we do. And if you read the Gospels, if you go through the Gospels, you'll see time and time and time again where the little people, the poor people, the nothing people are the foils for the disciples and the Pharisees and those who pretend to follow Jesus because they seem to get stuff that we can't. Why did Jesus in the temple in Jerusalem grab the disciples and pull them together and say, see that woman over there, that widow who's giving the little one penny? She knows how to give. There's something that they get often that we don't when it comes to following Jesus. When we go and we live amongst the poor, we don't go to tell and show people Jesus. We discover Jesus together. And when you live amongst the poor, the benefit is that you find out who Jesus really is. You see, when we first went to Calcutta and started talking about business amongst these women, we started with 20 women. And I wanted this to be on a real good business footing. You know, I'd never been a business person, but we wanted it to be done well, to be sustainable. And so we threw out our ideas to these 20 women and said, what do you think? And we're going to go and do this thing. And Mina, the same woman, said to us, you're going to have to earn our trust first. And we sat down with these 20 women and we gave them these ideas, got their feedback, and we started sewing bags. And we went through a whole training process. And my wife, who's a pretty good sewer, she began to teach them. And we got this order for 1,000 bags. That was a lot of bags. And so we worked hard on this first 1,000 bags for Huckleberry Farms in New Zealand. And would you believe it? Our first bags were absolutely disgusting. They were awful. They would sew the print upside down, inside out, just when I thought they couldn't actually make a mistake in another way, that they'd actually covered all the bases. They would find a way. They would. And while we were doing that, there were two women who came in and said, we want to join, we want to be free. And I said, look, we don't know what we're doing. How can this be on a business footing and us take you on when our bags are terrible? And I said, we're not ready for you. When we are, when things are going, I'll give you a call and you can come and you can join and you can be free. What was I saying to them? I was saying, you go and sell your body some more. And when we're ready for you, we'll give you a call. But But you see, I thought I knew how to run a kingdom business. Been a pastor, done a bit of theology. And then at the end of the month, well, actually, the next day, these two women came back. And they started working with them. And I thought my bungler was terrible. It was then. And I said, look, you understand you don't have a job. Yeah, yeah, we know. We just want to be with the community. We're coming. And they came back the next day and the next day and the next day. And at the end of the month, I paid the woman, only the 20 women, their wages. And then later I discovered that they had pulled their money and split it 22 ways. And I thought I knew how to run a kingdom business. And right at the beginning, I needed to be shown by these women what it means to be kingdom thinking and orientated. I thought I knew what it was like to really be able to love people, these women. We've got a woman who's my sister. Her name's Parvati. And she lives in the Freeset building, in the same building that we do. And it's been a hard, long journey with her because she's an alcoholic. And for years and years and years, it was just so hard. And I kid you not, there were times when we locked her into the building because she was so bad that we were concerned that one last binge would kill her. But today, she's been dry for over 2 years. And she is, I remember we had a 2 year celebration and she spoke in front of the whole Freeset and gave glory to God as the one that has been able to set her free from the drink and continues to set her free. But she used to be in relationship with this man who was a drunkard, an alcoholic, and he would come all the time absolutely sloshed. And I was concerned about the effect that he would have on her. And one weekend, one night, Parvati wasn't even at Freeset in our buildings. She was off on an AA camp for the weekend. But he came along thinking she was there. Absolutely drunk, 1 o'clock in the morning, trying to sleep, you know. I can't live without you. And he goes on for 2 hours. And I kid you not, I have visions of getting a bucket of water because we're on the first floor and tipping it over him. Had business visions of going down and giving him a boot up the backside because he was just a pain. And I knew that he wasn't good for Parvati. I knew he wasn't a good influence. And the next morning when she came back, I went down to see her and I said, look, we've got to do something with him. He's bad for you. We need to sort him out. And she said, so what you're saying, Kerry Dar, is that you loved me enough to get me through this and now I'm free, but you don't love him enough to do the same. I need to know what it means to love. Christ's love from these women. I thought I was a visionary. I mean, I'm the visionary of Freeset. And Mina comes up to me and says, I've been thinking and praying, and you know, it's all good that we're giving freedom to these women in Sonogachi, but Bobazar is just down the road. And there's 2,000 women down there. We need to go down there. We're going to go down there, and I found a building, and we're going to buy it. And I'm thinking, we've got 10,000 here, Mina. But all I could think about was, can I come and have a look with you? And so she led me down there. And I knew that God was using her to provide vision for me and for us. And this to today, there are women from that area that are now free and Freeset because of Mina's vision. Hey, and I forgot to tell you about this guy. He's been nearly dry for a year now. Parvati's man. Because of her. But I thought I knew what it was like to have vision. I used to believe for maybe 500 women who could be set free. Mina's vision is for 10,000 women in Kolkata. I mean, with Sonogachi's one real idea, to be set free. I'm following her. You know, I thought I knew how to share Jesus really well in this community. And I had it all figured out. It was systematized, if you like. You know, it makes sense. You'll be with me on this. What happens is that you talk to women who are standing in line about freedom. And it's about giving them a choice, right? It's about giving them a choice. And you say, you can choose to sew bags. And when they get to free set, then we can talk about Jesus. But you get them in the door first, you know? And so I was down at Beau Bazaar with Mina. And she was talking with this group of women and talking about freedom. And you could see the look on these girls' faces. They really wanted to be free. And I was waiting for her to launch into bags, sewing bags and training. And she said, "Oh, so you want real freedom then? You need to start praying to Jesus. He is the one that gives real freedom." And she turned the whole thing upside down. I thought I knew what real freedom was about. I really did. Recently, just a few weeks ago, one of our girls, I'll call her Gina, she came and she said, "I'm so excited because there's a room that is in our building that is bigger than the one I've got. And we can get that and I can have a decent room." You see, when Gina first came to Freeset, she was living underneath the bed in a brothel. She never had her own room. And so she would sleep under the bed. They put the beds up this high, so they put everything underneath. And she would sleep under there. There was no room or no place she could call home. And so when one of the girls in that room would have a customer, she'd be underneath the whole time, sleeping. And when she would use that room for a customer, I would presume she would have had to pay for that bed. And when she started at Freeset, we were able to get her a new room, a clean room. But space is so hard to get. Her room right now is about 2 feet, 3 feet wide by 4 feet high. It's underneath the stairs. It's clean and she can cook outside and it's in a good building. But it's very small. And she also has HIV/AIDS, and so there's times when her health is not too good. And there's times during the workday when she nods off and falls asleep. But she's an incredible woman with an incredible faith. And she was so excited because she could get a bigger room in the same building and she just needed a little bit of assistance for the deposit. And I was excited. I thought, great. And then I went and had a look at the room and yes, it would be perfect. And then I realized something. We have this other girl that I've been trying to get a room for a long time. And she is not yet free because she has parasites in her life. Her mother keeps her in the trade. Her husband, by default, keeps her in the trade. Her brother keeps her in the trade. And so every now and again, she has to go and sell her body because they want things and stuff and money. But if we could get her a room, and she'd be asking me just about daily, "Have you found me a room yet? Have you found me a room yet?" And all of a sudden I realized that this room would be perfect for her. But then what do I do about Gina? So I sat down and I thought I'd better talk with Gina because she needed it. She deserved that room. And I sat down with Gina and I said, "Look, this room would be really good for you. Your room is so small. But Patul needs to get out of the trade because she has to sell her body every now and again because of expectations she needs." And I couldn't finish the sentence because Gina stops me and she says, "Give her the room. I'm free. I'm free. Give her the room. I'll be really happy because I want to see her free. And she said it with all the joy that I've ever seen from one of our women. A room 4 foot high, a couple of feet wide, HIV/AIDS. And I thought I knew what freedom was all about. Plant yourself among the poor and those who have been trafficked, those who have been stolen, those who have no choice and no voice, and learn from them, and there will be freedom together. I'm going to ask Kelsey to come up. Kelsey, come up in here. Kelsey walked into Free Set. How long ago, Kelsey?
A year and a half ago.
See, I knew that.
Yeah.
And she wanted to interview me, and I said, well, we need a marketing manager. So she started the next day or something. And she's been with Free Set ever since. She comes with a lot of qualifications, and she's done this and that in business. But that's not why I like her. That's not why I think she's amazing. And she's the manager of Free Set Teas, and she's on Free Set's behalf, she leads fair trade and the trafficking side of things. I like her because she gets knits. Do you understand what I said?
Lice.
She gets lice in her hair lots of times. Do you know why? Because she spends time with the woman in their rooms. And sometimes she spends and stays overnight with them. She's got to be careful sometimes because she knows what it's like to live among the poor. That's why I like her.
Oh, so you all know I've had lice. Great. I'm Kelsey, and I am 24, so I'm probably same age as some of you. I'm pretty young at heart, I hope. Today is a really special day for me because about 5 years ago on this day, God called me to be in India. I'm not going to talk a lot about Free Set in the beginning. I'm going to kind of give you my testimony because I think that God has really put it on my heart to do that in front of this group of people. I'll start out with my life. I grew up in Idaho. So anyone from Idaho? Oh, sweet. Okay, one out of a million. we do grow potatoes there. And my parents, my mom didn't graduate from high school. My dad is a mechanic. My family doesn't really know a lot about academics or hasn't had a lot of opportunity to travel at all. And I grew up in a family that loved Jesus. I wasn't like forced to go to church every weekend, or as I say that, you know, when you're a child, sometimes you feel like that. But my mom loved Jesus. She prayed for my sister and I, and I did grow up in the church. But I actually didn't come to Christ until I was 14, because no one really explained to me what coming to Christ was. Like, I went to church all the time, but no one said, like, this is how you come to Jesus, you know? And so YWAM came and did a cool, like, play, you know, what YWAM does. They're awesome. But and I came to Christ when I was 14. The next summer, I went to a camp. I brought two of my friends that didn't know Jesus. And the guy that was speaking was really amazing. And my two friends ended up coming to Jesus there. And he had another call for people who already knew the Lord. And that was if you wanted to dedicate your life to spreading the gospel. I was 15. I had no idea what that meant. But I had my eyelids fluttering, you know, like sometimes when God's like, okay, get out of your seat, get out of your seat. It wasn't just like, say this prayer. It was like, go up to the front. So I was sitting there. My eyelids are fluttering. I'm 15. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be so embarrassed. But I ended up going to the front. And I prayed in the back with a lady, someone that was older and wiser than me, probably 50 or something. And we just prayed about my life and what it was going to look like. The call wasn't, I'm going to go be a missionary in India. It was, I'm going to give my life to the Lord to spread the gospel. So that was when I was 15. When I was like probably a senior in high school, I had this group come and speak at my university or at my high school. I went to public school. I didn't go to Christian school or homeschool or anything like that. I was like the sinner in my hometown. But the people that came were doing had a home for orphans in Nepal. And I was like, whoa, this is cool. You know, I grew up in small town Idaho. My parents had never been out of the country, never really out of Idaho or California. And I was like, okay, Nepal, this is neat. What is this? You know, I didn't think about the rest of the world until then. And then a little bit after that, when I was about to go to sleep, God gave me a vision of starting a business where I would be connecting people in the U.S. with people who knew where. It was just this clear vision of like creating products in a different country and then selling them to people here, but at the same time connecting people here with people in that country. I didn't know what that was. I was 18. I was like, okay, cool. So I just decided to kind of keep that in the back of my head. I loved people. I loved being with people, but I also loved school. I loved sports. I didn't know what I was going to do. But I wrote a scholarship application my senior year about this. Just kind of like, this is my plan for the future. You know, I want to help people in the rest of the world. It wasn't necessarily like, I want to spread Jesus to the rest of the world. It was like, I want to help people in the rest of the world and connect them to people in the U.S. And I got the money for that scholarship. After that, I kind of forgot. You know, I went to college. It was my freshman year. I studied business because I was like, oh, well, I might want to work in NGOs, but I feel like a lot of NGOs people don't know what they're doing when it comes. They like people and they want to help people, but they don't know about business. So I was like, well, I don't know a lot about business either. I'll go for the business stuff. So I studied business and sociology and economics and just loved what I was doing. And while there at university, I wasn't ever challenged to like be a missionary, but I knew that I wanted to spread love around the world. Like every single day I would write in my journal, like, God, please help me to spread love around the world. I don't know what that looks like, but I want to be your servant. That's all I want to do is serve you. I don't want money. I don't want any of those things. I just want to serve you. So my freshman year of college, I went to a church called Rock Harbor in California because I went to a university in California. And this guy was there. I went all by myself. It was like a spur of the moment thing because I'd just gotten back to California. And he was from India. His name was Suresh Kumar, and he was with Harvest India. He came and spoke, and I started bawling. I had never had it put on my heart, like, I want to go to India or anything like that. But I just started bawling. It was, again, one of those things, like, my eyelids were fluttering. I'm like, what is this going on? Am I being called to go to India? And so that day, I signed up to go on the India trip. It was for 2 weeks, and I knew my mom and dad were going to kill me. Like, seriously kill me. They live in Idaho. They don't like their going to the rest of the world. They don't like their daughter being in the rest of the world as an 18-year-old going to a scary country. But I did it anyway. I really felt like God was calling me. So that was about 6 months before I left for India. And the day before I left for India, which was the Christmas Day of 2004, the tsunami hit. So that made my parents feel that much better. I was going to the eastern side of India, where the tsunami was, but my group really prayed about it, and we felt like God was still calling us. So all of my family was like, we're going to go stand in front of the plane. We're not letting the plane get off of the ground. You are not going to India. And I was like, well, I'm not with you right now. I'm all by myself, so I think I'm just going to go. So I went. And it was the best thing I could have ever done. It wasn't easy. It was one of those short-term missions. I was young. I was like, I know everything. I'm going to save the world. You know, these people are really going to be helped by me in 2 weeks. Really? Come on, people. I didn't even speak the language. But there were 32 of us, and we went to do evangelism-type stuff and also, like, ministry with people. On the 31st, 5 years ago today, December 31st, I went to a red light area in Tenali, India, which is a very kind of small town in India. It's probably still like 1 million people. But my heart was broken. It was just really clear that God was breaking my heart to work with the women in India. And that night we took communion, like all of you guys are going to do tonight. We took communion, and they had these verses sitting out where you just took one and then went back to your seat and prayed. And first I felt the call to go to the red light area, and then I'm taking communion, and I get the verse, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding." And then the Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. I've kept it. It meant a lot to me. I knew that God was calling me back, but I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't ever like have the calling, like, I want to go be a missionary. I went to secular school. I went to secular college. I wasn't a professional at knowing theology or the Bible. I just knew that I wanted to love people. So I came back from that trip with this in my heart, and I and some other people went to India 2 months later, and two women from that group had the same thing put on their heart. So we ended up starting an organization. It was in the U.S. based, but we wanted to help women get out of the trade in India. That was probably my sophomore year of college. So I was going with that, doing a lot of marketing, doing a lot of cool things in the U.S. So, like, our organization, it's a great organization, but our organization was doing a lot of stuff in the U.S. But then I started to think, like, what are we doing with the women in India? Like, how do we even know how this is affecting them or impacting them? You know, we can raise all this money and make all these cool websites, but what are we actually doing? And so I taught at a Spanish-speaking school for first through fifth graders, and one of the ladies there was like, "You're smart. You're the president of your university. Why don't you look at the Fulbright?" And I was like, "What's the Fulbright?" And so I looked into the Fulbright, and it's a scholarship that the U.S. government gives you. It's pretty hard to get. And I was like, "Yeah, right. I'm not going to get the Fulbright." But I applied. And because God just like had told me, you know, apply for the Fulbright, not go on a mission trip, not go over to India and tell women how to do things. Apply for a Fulbright. A Fulbright is where you do research. So I was like, this is a perfect opportunity. I can go to India, have it paid for a year, and learn what the women in India really need. And so I was blessed with the Fulbright scholarship. And that was amazing. I was the first one at my university to get it, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, I got a Fulbright scholarship to India. I get to go for a year to learn. But at the same point, I still had this idea of, like, this is my research project. I have to get this done. I have to interview these people. I have to learn this, this, and this. But I left for India, and God totally broke me. I was there, learned the language, I learned Bengali, I was trying to interview people, but I had to like get around India all by myself. It wasn't a mission trip of 32 people, it was me by myself in India at the age of 21, not knowing what I was doing. And it was about 4 months into it where I was really broken. I was like, God, I feel like you've had me go to India on this Fulbright scholarship to learn about the women, but I don't feel like I've even like touched the surface. And then I went to interview Carrie, just because the other organization I was with was like, oh yeah, we met this guy, I think he's in Calcutta, you know, you should go see what he's doing. So I walked in the door, already speaking Bengali, already knowing how to get around Calcutta, and he was like, we need a marketing director tomorrow. I was like, well, I've been learning Bengali, but not really anything else, so why not volunteer? So I started volunteering with Reset, and I had all of the background. I didn't go to school to be a missionary. I didn't go to international track of whatever. Like, I went to school to learn business. I went to school to do economics and do sociology as well. And I did a lot of leadership at my university. I was an RA. I counseled women that had been raped in Orange County. So I had all these things, but it wasn't like me planning, okay, so I'm going to go into FreeSet with all of these skills ready to go. No, that was totally God. God gave me all of these opportunities when I was at university so that I would be like packaged and ready to go for FreeSet. Amazing. Amen? Yeah, not me, God. Holy cow. So I go into FreeSet and I'm working there 12 hours a day doing a lot of different things on the computer. You know, I speak a little Bengali, and then I start to work in the screen printing section, and that's where I really start to like love working there, love being with the women, learning so much. Like Carrie has told so many stories of how the women have shown him what true love is, and I can tell you that I have so many stories of that. So I was working in the screen printing section, getting dirty every day. You know, we mix paint by hand, and I was like covered in paint. But I loved working with the women. And then Carrie was thinking about, all right, so let's do this t-shirt thing. I'm like, okay, never started a business before. I've started other things, but let's go for it. So it was great. Carrie really, I think, listened to God. He hasn't ever told me this, but I really think Carrie was listening to God when he was like, Kelsey, you know what? Just do this. Just go for it. And I was given the skills from God to be able to do that. So we started with the Fairtrade Organic T-shirt company. And I had 4 women in the beginning. So he started out with 20. I started out with 4. And as he said, when he was making the bags upside down, you know, right side up, all of those things, I was the same way with the women. But you know what? I was supposed to be the manager, but really they were managing things. I didn't know how to make t-shirts. I didn't know how to design t-shirts. I didn't know how to do any of those things. But as a team, we have started FreeSet Tees. It has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with them and God. How cool is that? God is amazing. So that was probably in October of 2 years ago. In February, we had our official launch and gained about 2 more ladies and a manager that also kind of walked in off the street. We had Ruth, who is an educated Bengali woman, who just came in and said, oh, you know, I want to work here. We're like, you speak English? You've been on like a fashion show, designing show. You've designed dresses for celebrities. And she was like, yeah, I'm going to work here. I love Jesus. How cool is that? Amen? Like, Carrie gets me, then I get Ruth. We get all these ladies together. And now we're up to 20. We've been given a beautiful building by people who have donated money. And we're making t-shirts, but that's not what it's about. We're loving each other. We're learning about Jesus every day. And I can tell you, I work 12 hours a day most days, and the ladies know I'm tired, but they take care of me. I'm supposed to be there helping them, but yeah, right, that's not the case at all. Protima, one of our ladies, who's amazing, really hardcore. Like, she looks really tough on the outside, but once you actually meet her, she is the sweetest woman you'll ever meet. Some days she'll cook extra just so that she can feed me, because she knows that I'll forget to eat lunch. I mean, this is a woman who doesn't have that much. I can make my own food. I have money to buy food. I just sometimes don't have time. I don't ask her to do this. I don't say, wow, I'm starving today. She knows this, and she makes me food every day. Not every day, but she'll bring me extra food. So I just want to, through this story, want to encourage you that you can come to these places. Urbana is amazing. I have seen amazing things happening that God is doing. But it's not about saying I'm going to be a missionary, because I wouldn't consider myself a missionary. Like, God has used the skills, given me the abilities that I have, not to be a missionary, but to spread his love. I didn't go to school to be a missionary. I didn't go to seminary, but I know that I love Jesus, and I know business. So through everything that you guys do, no matter if you're in the U.S., if you're in school, if you're in India, you can spread God's love, and God will equip you with whatever you need. And he will put your feet, like, I know when I was about to graduate from college, I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? You know, what if I don't get the Fulbright? But God knew already. So I know a lot of you are seniors, you're graduating. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm not good enough. How am I going to be used? I want to love Jesus. Maybe I want to be a missionary, but where do I go? God knows all of this. You don't have to worry. And that is one of the biggest things that I've learned in Calcutta, is about faith. So many times I've just been like, I can't do this. The fabric's not coming. We don't have bathrooms, you know. But God provides every single thing that we need. Every single thing. And I might think we need something, but then it's very clear that it's not what we need. And even in my own life, like, I was supposed to be in Calcutta for a year on my Fulbright, and God called me to be there longer. Had four businessmen, not even Christians, provide me with enough money to be there for the next year and a half. And I didn't even have to really do fundraising. Like, it was just, bam, four trustees at my university, here you go, here's the money. How clear of a sign is that from God that I was supposed to be there longer? Amen, right? So don't get discouraged. Know that God is walking before you. And also, just don't be afraid that you don't have the skills. Like, I stay with the women and get knits and all of that, but it's not because I'm skilled or that I've sacrificed to go live with them or whatever. I love it. I love being with the women. It's like my sisters. So, yeah, let's go.
But then she gives me nits, and that is a problem. Look, we've got a bit of time, a little bit of time. If you've got a question that you'd like to ask either myself or Kelsey, then here's the time to ask it. Ask brief questions, we'll get a mic to you so that everybody can hear what your question is. So if you raise your hand, and we'll get a mic around to be able to do that, and either Kelsey or I will seek to answer your question.
Hi. My question is about the process of how you get the girls. I know that you said they come to you, but do you have to get permission from all of their madams or pimps or whatever they have?
Very good question. Look, all the women are at different circumstances. Some are under madams, and we have to work through the madams to actually obtain their freedom. We never, hear this, we never pay a madam for a girl's freedom. Because we're not going to put money in that madam's hands to go and buy another new girl. Okay, so we're going to negotiate this. All right, we're going to negotiate. We're going to work through things with babus or men that are in their lives. We're going to sort out problems with loans, because they get involved with loans because they need health care for their son, and they borrow some money at 10% flat per month, and they're in debt for the rest of their life. So we've got to work through all of those things. And it's quite a process. It's not just a matter of giving a job. For freedom to be on offer. So we work through all of those things. It's not just one meeting. And the story that I told before about that young girl, you know, it was relatively straightforward for her because she had a madam that was willing to give her freedom. But it's often not like that. Does that answer your question? If they don't let them go, then we keep working on it. But we are not always successful with some girls, but we are successful, they are successful a large percentage of the time, but not 100%, sadly. Sorry, you have to put your hand up so the mic can come.
Hey, Kerry, how you doing? I have kind of a tough question for you. As a male, I'm already looked down upon going into these kind of situations with women who have been trafficked and had issues or have been abused by other men. How would you I don't know how to really ask the question. How would you explain or how would you help a situation where I have a huge passion, God's laid it on my heart, to help these women, to help them get out of these type of situations? How could I help in that kind of situation?
You always go visiting and in these areas with women. Don't ever go alone. Recognize that as a man you will always have temptations. Recognize that if you don't think that you will, you're a liar, because we are men. Recognize that these women are special. The interesting thing about Kolkata is that in the culture there is that you would think that they have lost their respect for men. And I think in our cultures, in New Zealand culture included, then, you know, there is a greater, what's the word I'm looking for? Men are seen with real more disdain than they are within Kolkata. They still hold men at a reasonably high level, despite the fact that they have used and abused them. And that is helpful, but I never go into the area. I shouldn't say never, because there's once or twice and I've told my wife and reported back, but I don't go in alone, and that's really, really important. But women need to see men who will actually appreciate them and love and cherish them. When I say love, I mean love in the right way and cherish them. They need to see that modelled. They need to see a good, healthy relationship between a husband and wife. They need to see that kind of stuff. And that's where you can be of great use too.